Mini episode 109 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, everyone, welcome. It's mini episode 109 of the FDH Lounge. It's actually a joint production here. The FDH Lounge, and being made possible through the Sportsology channel here, good friend Russ Cohen of Sportsology, who we love to talk hockey with on all different points of the season. We have the Stanley Cup playoffs coming up, and of course that is the point of focus here today, to be able to break down the playoff picture, take a look through the next 2 months, an unprecedented Stanley Cup run, all of which will be on national television on one platform or another. Some of the channels not as widely available, but nonetheless nationally available in all four rounds for the first time ever. So it's a historic and very interesting playoff season ahead of us here. And who better to talk to than the man who's making this possible through the channel, through Sportsology. And it's somebody that longtime FDH Lounge dignitary that we love to talk hockey with, good pal Russ Cohen. Russ, how you doing today, my friend?
Good, Rick. How are you? This is the best time of the year, man.
All right, thanks. Yeah, I love this, buddy. I truly do. And this is a thing where I probably have more friends than you do that are casual hockey fans. A lot of your friends are probably more hardcore than mine. But this is the time of year when I think I'm successfully able to evangelize to some of these folks and get them watching. It's a tremendous hook. To be able to get them watching this time of year, the excitement of these games, it is pretty much unparalleled.
It really is. I watch playoffs in all sports, and every athlete in every sport puts it all out on the line. But even if you want to say that the NFL playoffs are greater, I might argue with you, because while the intensity is tremendous, they're playing less games. And these guys are playing a lot more games to get to the end result. And you can't tell me the intensity is any less in a hockey game, a playoff hockey game, than it is in a football game.
That is absolutely true. And the formula that I always use personally is in terms of quantity times quality. When you add that together over the next 2 months, what we've got to look forward to is going to be absolutely tremendous. I think you can't take a look at the overall picture, which definitely we want to do here, without talking about some of the teams that are missing from it. No shocks in the Western Conference, although the absolute horrid nature of the Columbus Blue Jackets is probably a surprise. They geared up this year. They had every right to expect to be at least a 7 or an 8 seed and were the worst team in the league almost wire to wire. In the Eastern Conference, a couple of real legit surprises. A Buffalo team that was pretty good before ownership really geared up last winter and poured a boatload of money into them. They made a late run, but came up short. They have to go down as a big bust for this season. And also Tampa Bay, excellent young team, came within one game of the finals last year, never really contended for the playoffs this year. So it is a story before we get to the teams in the playoffs, also of some of the teams that aren't there.
Yeah, the Sabres I thought would make it. They came up short. They did a good job at the end with their acquisition of Cody Hodgson. I think that's going to help them for the future. For whatever reason, they just didn't have enough this year. Towards the end, Ryan Miller was one of the best goalies in the league, and they came up short. I wasn't expecting much, to be honest, from the Columbus Blue Jackets, even with the trade. I felt like they gave up too much. I know a lot about Jeff Carter, and he's not impressed me in recent years. So that part didn't surprise me as much. We'll see what happens going forward with them. I mean, again, they're in a great position in the draft, and there's always going to be draft haters where they say, well, you know, you get all these guys, and they've been drafting high every year, and they still can't do it. But You know, I could, for every time you say that, I can point out teams like the Chicago Blackhawks that mainly have built their team through the draft. So, you know, you have to just look at it both ways.
That's true. And the key comes down to successfully executing in the draft, as the Blackhawks have done, and as the Blue Jackets, through a decade plus of futility, have not. You're absolutely right about that. In the Eastern Conference, which I know you tend to cover a little bit more on a day-to-day basis, mm-hmm. It's very interesting when you look towards the top of the seeds here. You've got a couple of the most recent defending conference champions in the mix here, whether it be the defending Stanley Cup champions Boston and the 2 seed Pittsburgh 4, Philly 5. But some of the other higher seeds, a little bit of a surprise. Florida at 3, even for anybody that thought that they might sneak into the playoffs this year, and they kind of did because they don't really have one of the better records in the Eastern Conference, but they did win a division to make themselves the 3 seed. You got them there. You've got your New York Rangers as the number 1 seed, and in the course of this, displacing the Washington Capitals, who are always towards the top here. So we got a couple of the perennial teams towards the top. We got a couple of surprises mixed in there. But that shows me that a lot of these first-round series may be a little bit tighter than expected. Well, in the Western Conference, it strikes me that the seeds don't really mean as much in terms of the rankings. In the East, maybe they mean a little bit more, especially in the one or two spots as far as some of the matchups there. But it really looks pretty jumbled and like anything can happen in a couple of these series.
Yeah, no question anything can happen. I think the thing about Florida is, I think they were a bit surprising early on. They had the best power play in hockey. Then they had injuries to 3 of their blue liners, and that would really do damage to a lot of teams. You know, it was Kulikov, Garrison, and Campbell. They were all hurt at one time. That's kind of rough. So they went through that. They got over it. They battled it out with Washington at the end of the year. They got that, and again, I hate this more than anything, that number 3 seed, even though they probably, not probably, they have the worst goal differential for a division leader, I believe it's in the last 12 years, at mm-hmm. minus 24. So that's, but again, that's where they are. So they get that drafting, they get that slotting, and, you know, it is what it is. I'm never thrilled with it. I always think that the Southeast Conference has a little bit of an edge when they get that seeding. So I think, and we've seen Tampa win the Stanley Cup from there, and I think it's a dangerous spot. This year I'm not thinking Florida's going that far, so it's not going to be a big deal. All that said, yeah, the Rangers, they're at the top. They have some issues. They play hard. You know, they were 6-4 down the stretch. Lundqvist has a little bit of a sore arm. He got that in the Flyers game. He says it's getting better. I believe it. I didn't see great play out of him, though, in that Washington game. That was a rough game. So we'll see what they have come game one. I think they're going to do very well against Ottawa, but to make it down that whole stretch, to say that they're going to win the Stanley Cup because of that top seed, I think that's a stretch. I do. I think there's some dangerous teams. I don't think Washington's dangerous. We could talk about that whenever, but I think they're still too soft. I think when you look at the Boston Bruins, I think too many people have dismissed them because, well, you can't repeat, oh, they look tired, oh, they look this. Well, you know, at the end of the day, they still ended up with 102 points. And somehow they got there. They have a pretty full team intact. Even Tuukka Rask may be back for the playoffs, so I'm not sure what happens to Marty Turco if that happens. But I guess he gets to, you know, go for the ride. And that's, to me, it's the East is tough. I understand the West is more talented, but I think there's more clear-cut things that will happen in the West that won't happen in the East. I think the East is going to be a bit more surprising.
Very interesting. Well, one of the surprises I would think would not be the 2-7 in the East, as you started to allude to there a second ago, Boston and Washington, even if anybody thinks Boston run into any problems. And I don't know why anybody would think that the repeat thing is going to be that big of a deal. My Red Wings came within a game of that just a couple of years ago. It's not easy, but it can be done, and a team like Boston seems well set to do it. Moreover, the thing that makes it, in my opinion, the biggest foregone conclusion of the first round The fact that Washington is scrambling for anybody to go between the pipes right about now, that's not where you want to be heading into the first game of the first round.
No, no question. And they just, you don't know where that's going to lead them. They don't know where that's going to lead them. And I understand they think they have some toughness. Troy Brower certainly added some toughness for them. We know him from the Blackhawks. Is it enough? I don't think so. I think the other issue is with Boston's toughness and size that's very apparent, unless Washington is going to be just an unbelievable finesse team like we all thought they could be, I think Boston is just going to run them over. And I said it on Twitter earlier, and I'll say it again. I think they'll just flatten them like a bad bicycle tire.
Yeah, it definitely is the looks of that, no question about it. As far as the series that is almost certainly going to be the most competitive one, and it's never any surprise when it's the 4-5, but whenever you've got the old Pennsylvania State Championship matching up here between Pittsburgh and Philly, seems like if they're matching up in the first round, it's always the 4-5, or sometimes they meet a little later. I think a couple of years ago it might have been the conference finals, but it's always very heated between these two teams. It's always very physical. And you've also got the added air of controversy swirling around right now as some folks are taking issue, rightfully in my opinion, with Pittsburgh and their style of play.
Yeah, and it's definitely rightfully, and I for one, don't want to be this kind of guy that says they get special breaks from the league and everything, because I don't necessarily think that's true, but I think what does happen is I think the refs, I don't want to say they're starstruck, but something does happen with them where they're definitely missing calls. And somebody like Sidney Crosby, who could walk around with a broken stick and nothing happens to him, that's bad, because we see that get called in every other game. All that said, this is just going to be a deadly series for both teams. I mean, it's going to be a war of attrition. I think the one thing that is worth watching but won't get talked about enough is Ilya Bryzgalov's foot. Is it a chip fracture? Is it just a chip bone? Whatever it is, it's going to hurt. And he's going to have to deal with pain through the entire playoffs. He hasn't been as solid as he once was down the stretch where he finally did settle in, but he hasn't been terrible either. So will he be good enough to sustain? Maybe. Pittsburgh's defense isn't what it used to be. We all want to just sort of jump on board and say, this is the best team, they're going to win the Stanley Cup, might as well just hand it to them today. Well, it's not like when everybody was healthy for them, they won it every other year. There's a lot of other teams in the NHL. I like what Pittsburgh brings. I think Neil with Crosby is terrific. I think Malkin is the MVP of the league, and I pretty much voted that way, so I certainly voted in that direction. I think they have some strong goaltending in Marc-Andre Fleury, so I think they have enough to get past the Flyers. I think the home ice is going to be everything. I think it will go down to Game 7, and even though the Flyers have never lost in that, well, they finally lost in that building that last game of the year, which I'm not sure it mattered because it was sort of like a playoff scrimmage. To me, it doesn't matter anyhow. Only thing that matters is this series right here, right now. And I think at the end of the day, the Flyers will put up a good fight. I think they're still a little too up and down. They're not a good first period team. They're an excellent second period team. If they don't break out of that mold, they could have some problems in some of these games. And that's why I think ultimately Pittsburgh will take them in 7.
Yeah, I see it going 7 also. And I also agree on the outcome for it. Again, for somebody that's watched as much playoff hockey as you, I'm curious to your thoughts on this. I mean, this looks like on paper anyways, the kind of thing that because of the physicality that's going to be there in this series, the intense rivalry that's already there, this looks like the kind of thing that's going to take a lot of steam out of the winner heading into the next round regardless. Now, again, some of these other series could go longer. I happen to also think the Rangers and Ottawa might go maybe surprisingly long. But is a Pittsburgh-Philly series unique to you out of all of the 4-1s in the first round in the sense that the winner might really come out of it the most bruised?
They're definitely going to come out of it bruised. I think either team has so much talent offensively that even if they come out of it bruised, they still have enough to to win the next round too, and maybe even beyond that. So I don't think it'll be mortal to either team, but I think it definitely will take out a little punch. There's no question about it. But I think if we look at both of these teams, they have enough veterans that have been through this grind. They've all been to, you know, a lot of these guys have been to the Stanley Cup. I think that's going to help. And I think, you know, even when you look at a team like Philly, has an awful amount, a lot of youth in there. Matt Reed, Sean Couturier. There's a lot of young guys that they've infused into that lineup. Voracek. A lot of these young legs, those kinds of things will help them. So I think either one of these teams, I think, will be okay even in the next round. But with all that said, it's going to be tough. Now, in the past, in the old days, you definitely didn't want to, you always wanted to face an easy first-round opponent, and that always seemed to set you up for a good time in the playoffs and for a long run. But, I think over the last 5-6 years, that's changed a bit. And it almost seems like the teams that are under the most extreme circumstances, the ones that are putting it all out there every game, every minute, like the Bruins did last year. I mean, did the Bruins have an easy time last year? I mean, I'd have to go back and look and see, but it didn't seem like they did.
No,
actually,
no,
they won
I don't think so.
They won 3 game 7s, didn't they? I mean,
yeah.
Leading into the Stanley Cup. And so, yeah, So I don't think there's too much to make out of that.
Okay. In terms of the teams that might survive to make it through the first round, it sounds like, again, you and I both wouldn't be terribly surprised if we ended up getting a New Jersey versus Rangers second-round series here. That was, of course, a huge rivalry back in the 90s. Anytime it's in the metro area, that's going to be a given that it's going to be a huge playoff series. But how big do you think that will be for the league if that ends up coming to pass here, the renewal of that playoff rivalry?
I think it'd be really good. I think it'd be real marketable. I think right off the bat, I could see the marketing of, you know, Henrik Lundqvist against Martin Brodeur. Martin Brodeur, surefire Hall of Famer, maybe the best goalie of all time. Lundqvist, the best goalie this year. Just got on the cover of Sports Illustrated, albeit a regional issue. Who knows if he'll be on the cover in Detroit. Maybe that'll be Nick Lidstrom. But the idea is that's a pretty big deal because SI usually doesn't do it. So I think there's some built-in marketing there. I think New Jersey will have the easiest of the first-round opponents. I believe I took them in 5. People can check out my predictions over at Sportsology. And I think not only will they have it easy, but I think Brodeur has been playing so much better lately ever since the moves. You know, they did a nice job. They've picked up some players that have really helped. They've seemed to gel. Ilya Kovalchuk's having a great year. Ponikarovsky was a hell of a pickup. He was almost a point a game for the whole time they got him. So I think, and Zach Parise's come back strong. So I think when you look at them, they're a different team. I mean, if I told you David Clarkson would have 30 goals, you would laugh at me. I probably would laugh at me.
Mm-hmm.
But yet that's what happened. So based on that, I say, you know, I kind of think New Jersey could be very dangerous, and I don't want to predict the winner yet because I'd like to see who's in, who's out, who's hurt, who's not. But that would be an unbelievable series, to say the least.
Yeah, that definitely would seem to be the case, and that would be the kind of thing that would get the league the kind of media profile that you would want for a second-round series, no doubt about that. Big picture, and looking at the East before we turn to the West here, I've got the Rangers over Boston in the conference finals. How do you see things shaking out ultimately in the East?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I'm a pretty stubborn guy, and I always have the same formula. I always pick 2 teams preseason. They'll always pin me to the wall when they have me on XM. And preseason, it was Washington, San Jose, and then I didn't exactly like the way I saw things going for Washington, and especially with the goaltending, and I saw Boston just, you know, improving and becoming the team they were again last year. So I switched over to Boston. So I think it's going to be Boston, Pittsburgh in that Eastern Conference Final, and I think Boston can beat them. I think the issue there is they still have Thomas, who might be a smidge better than Marc-Andre Fleury. They still have the tremendous amount of offensive skill, and Boston's strength is they roll 4 great lines. Pittsburgh's strength is they have 4 lines, but they have better players on each line. And I think the difference is Boston's system is better, and their defense is better. And I think Zdeno Chara is the big X factor there, and Pittsburgh doesn't really have anybody to match that. Chris Letang, they're all puck movers. There's nobody big and strong like that. And I think in that position, if he could taste another cup, that's really going to be – he'll almost be that immovable object. So I think I still like the Boston Bruins over any of them. Do I think the Rangers could get there? I do. I don't think it's their year, though, and I think if they got there, then that might be where the train lets them off.
Yeah, and that's my sense if they win the East also. I interestingly enough, I had Boston-Pittsburgh as a second-round series because I had the Rangers in New Jersey winning, doing a 1-6 in the second round. So that was how mine shook out. Looking at the Western Conference, it really seems like this is really a case where the seeds really don't seem to mean a whole lot. I mean,
no.
At the beginning of the season, if somebody told Vancouver they were going to win the President's Trophy and have to play Los Angeles in the first round, they'd be pretty PO'd. Now, Los Angeles kind of mirrored, I think, to a certain extent, Buffalo and some of these other high-flying teams coming into the season. The only difference being they were able to turn it on late. Made some moves at the trading deadline, gelled a little bit better, made it happen. But, I mean, it's almost ridiculous. Vancouver, L.A., St. Louis and San Jose, 100 people out of 100 at the beginning of the season would have said if this was a 2-7 matchup that San Jose would have been the 2 and St. Louis would have been the 7. But here we are. And you look at the 4-5 with Detroit and Nashville. Again, to me, the Central Division is, if it wasn't for the Columbus Blue Jackets, with apologies to the NL East, that would be the toughest division in sports. So I don't know if the seeds mean a whole lot there. And then Phoenix and Chicago, the 3-6, you look at that, it's really a mirror of the East with Florida playing New Jersey here and the division winner almost being, I think in many quarters being an underdog.
Yeah, well, I guess let's start with Phoenix, Chicago. You know, I looked at it. I like to look at stats. And look, I'll be the first guy to throw out regular season stats too. Somebody even who I'm very fond of and a good friend, big Chicago fan, you know, wrote on Twitter, hey, Chicago's special teams have stunk all regular season. I'm like, yeah, they did, but, you know, Boston was ranked 21st on the power play, the same as Chicago is, heading into the playoffs, and somehow they got through it. I think when you start to be ranked 27, 8, 9, with like teams like the Rangers and such, it's a bit more problematic. I think when you look at the players that are on Chicago's roster, you would have to say, okay, at some point, they'll get it together. But what I like that they're doing is there's talk of them sort of forming a super line. And I think, you know, sometimes you want to spread the talent and sometimes you don't. Sometimes you do want to have a line that is really hard for other teams to match up. And if you have Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, and Marian Hossa on the same line, you've got offense, you've got defense, you've got puck control. You've got a lot of things there that do cause a lot of matchup problems. And then you can put Patrick Sharp on the next line who led the team in goals. So I think if you have that one super line, I think that's a great place to start. Look, goaltending's been an issue. Corey Crawford can be really good for stretches and then can be very average. Mike Smith is having a career year for the Coyotes. He really is. But I look at the Coyotes' blue line, and I think they're a little thin. I look at the Coyotes' scoring, and I know it's a little thin. I still have to say the Hawks in six because I just don't see where the Coyotes are going to get the goals that they're going to need. I think Oliver Ekman-Larsson's a tremendous young talent on defense and sort of reminds me of a young Nick Lidstrom, and maybe he will add some more of that and really make it a close one. But at the end of the day, I still got to go with the Blackhawks there.
I would agree with you on that. Let's take a look at the 4-5. My Red Wings, who are missing out on home ice here, and in many quarters I'm seeing some predictions about that being problematic because of the extreme home road splits that the Red Wings have had for this year. But again, it really is an interesting situation with St. Louis being the 2, Detroit the 5, Chicago the 6, Nashville the 4, so jammed up here in terms of points in that division this year. It really was a circumstance. I've got a good friend who's a Red Wings fan who was really gripping coming down the stretch, and I was a little more philosophical. I thought, well, geez, you can't, you know, you go through a wild swing of as many consecutive home wins as that, and many times there is an evening out effect on the other end. You don't just level off a little bit, you level off in a steep fashion, and that's what happened here. So how do you see that one shaking out? I have optimism as a Kings fan from my point of view, but how do you see it?
You should have optimism. I mean, I think part of that leveling out process was Jimmy Howard getting hurt for a while, Nick Lidstrom being in and out of the lineup. I mean, I looked it up. To me, one of the most astounding things I found statistically was that Lidstrom only played 70 games. And you'd say, well, you know, at his age, that's still pretty good. And that's his lowest total since 1996. That's how many games this guy's played. It's quite amazing as a defenseman, really just an all-timer. I look at the series, and I know Nashville is everybody's darling. I understand that. And I understand that Nashville has pushed all the chips in the middle because they don't know what's going to happen with Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, and they know they're going to lose Radulov after this year. And so I get all that too. All that said, I still look at the Red Wings. I like their coaching. I like their system of being able to plug in guys and get the same results. The names aren't the same, but they still have some Hall of Famers on that roster. And I still think they could edge out Nashville. I understand Pekka Rinne is a better goalie than Jimmy Howard. I get it. But to me, it's amazing that Nashville has the number one power play in the league. To me, that's their best thing that they have going for them. And Weber has 10 goals and Hornqvist is 8. And they've got a lot of guys with 5. I mean, they do very well on the power play. And their PK is great because of Pekka Rinne and some other players. Still, Pavel Datsyuk, one of the greatest two-way players that'll ever play in the playoffs. So clutch. Guys like Zetterberg. I like Filippula. Franzen in the crease. Hudler has had a lot of experience, and he got to sort of witness and sort of play in that cup run and those couple of really good years, and now he's starting to excel. I still can't count Detroit out. Lidstrom will play. He'll play his heart out. He knows this is it. You know, even a guy like Cronwall can be a factor. I still ultimately like the big names that they have as compared to the no names and, you know, Paul Gostads, guys who are going to have to win faceoffs and use the size. And Radulov had 7 points in 9 games. And while that's really good and that's going to help Nashville's scoring problem, and it looks like he's a little better defensively, he's not great, I still don't think it's enough. And I still take the Red Wings in 7. I don't care if they have to win on the road. Doesn't really matter to me.
I agree with all of that. And again, what it comes down to is the Red Wings having better, I think, depth and just being more evenly set across the board than most of the teams in the playoff picture this year. That's one of the things that I look at as an analyst. Just being impressed with that. No real weaknesses, at any main points here. And with most of the contenders, I think you can single out something. The only thing you said that scares me personally as a fan when you're talking about Nashville is the sense for them that it's now or never with the way that they've loaded up. Because in my mind, that's the X factor that I think makes Detroit, and this might be surprising to some people, but I'll say it, the Stanley Cup favorite, because I think the tipping point for me is the emotion of playing for Lidstrom, being able to make him a five-time champion, which is so rare in sports. Nashville might be one of the few teams that can match them in terms of motivation.
Yeah, it will be the toughest of the first-round matchups. Even though I picked other series in 7, I think this one will be the toughest, and I think whoever passes the test, you could certainly make the argument that they will probably make it to the Western Conference Finals at least.
I think so. In terms of the other first-round matchups here, when you're looking at Vancouver and St. Louis and those ones there, I do have them getting by, but I have both of those series being pretty rough. How do you see them shaping up?
Well, I'll go with Vancouver-LA first. I mean, LA's got a tremendous problem scoring, and I think Jonathan Quick is one of the better goalies in the league this year. I had him high. I have him ranked high. I have him ranked as an all-star. And I still look at them and I say, you know, nice year, made the playoffs. If but they're not going to be able to match the Canucks. I think the Canucks with their special teams are amazing. I think the lines they roll out are amazing. I think they're a well-oiled machine. I think they're a little bit better defensively this year, depth-wise. That's what hurt them in the Stanley Cup last year. I think they've improved in all those areas. And I've said it on record, and I'll say it again. I think if they switched to Corey Schneider, they'd win the Stanley Cup. But they won't do that, or at least they're not going to do that right away. So I think Roberto Luongo is still solid enough that if he's going to be the guy, he can get through that series. I can't remember the amount of games I picked it in. I think I picked it in five or six. I feel pretty confident about Vancouver. St. Louis, San Jose, I think, is the one where you say the seeding doesn't matter. I think I just needed to see the Sharks get in the playoffs. And maybe it's better that they're not one of the top seeds this year. I saw some things at the end, some fight, if you want to use for lack of a better term. We don't see Joe Thornton fighting very much. And we've all kind of said, how come he hasn't done that his whole career? But now he's doing it. Because I think he's, you know, he's looking at the writing on the wall saying he's not getting any younger and he wants to win a cup. He's doing it. We saw the play that Ryan Clough made on the bench with the extra stick, knocking the puck away. Totally dirty play. Got away with it. Had the smirk on his face. I got to give him credit. It helped him in the game. It's one of those things where it's gamesmanship at its best. Those are things that I don't think we used to see out of the San Jose Sharks. Now, you're the Western guy. Do you agree with that?
I would tend to agree with that. I can also say, as somebody that follows the West a little closer, I'm very relieved personally as I was breaking this down. I don't see any way, with it being a 5-7, that it would be a Detroit-San Jose matchup until the Western Conference Finals, which, after the way it's gone the last 2 years, comes as a tremendous relief.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I look at him and I say Antti Niemi is a former Cup winner. We know that he gets hot and you could ride him. I look at the amazing amount of talent and continuity. They have a lot of continuity. They have guys that have been together for a while. They have Logan Couture, who's one of the great young players in the league. So they've got a lot of things going for them. It's not to say St. Louis doesn't. St. Louis has a great system, but St. Louis has two goalies. Which one are they going with? Are they going with Halak or are they going with Elliott? Each in their own right are terrific goalies. Elliott's had an unbelievable year. Because of the money, are they going to start with Halak? They just might. Would that be the difference? It could be. You know, what if they lose a game or two, then all of a sudden Hitch makes a switch? I mean, it's one of those things where it's tough to have a goalie tandem. I think in this day and age, it's ridiculously hard. I don't think that there's enough scoring on St. Louis. I think they have a good amount of scoring. I like guys like Perron. I like guys like Backes. I like Shattenkirk on defense. There's a lot to like. But I still think at the end of the day, they are going to lack a little bit of that offensive talent and that swagger that the Sharks definitely have. Guys like Boyle, they've been around. He's won a cup. They just don't have that. And I think that's going to be the one thing they're lacking. And I give them credit for a big season. And they're a great home team, and they're not a great road team. And I think that's going to hurt them.
Well, and this is a very rare 2-7 series. It would not be a tremendous upset if the 7 seed won. And, in fact, the 7 seed, having done so much more in the playoffs in recent years, that's where we talk about the seedings almost being a little bit fluky. You know, with St. Louis, again, with apologies to Shattenkirk and some of the other fellows, again, the best two players on that team both play between the pipes. So let me ask you this, Russ. For as much hockey as you watched over the years, it would be very, very unconventional to do this. But could Ken Hitchcock, could he make it stick if he said, look, I'm going to treat this like I would the regular season, where, you know, whoever's the number one guy is not going to play all the games. I'm going to go back and forth between them, and not even necessarily, oh, so-and-so had a bad game, so he's going to get the hook, but I'm going to have a rotation going. Could he make that stick plausibly?
He possibly could. I think in recent years, the closest thing we saw was when Carolina was going with Gerber, and then all of a sudden they went with Cam Ward, but then they went with Cam Ward, and Cam Ward won the Stanley Cup. I think ultimately, at some point, you have to make that final switch. And whenever that is, and it can't, it usually comes before the Stanley Cup. But he could, you know, he could possibly get through it before then. It's a real possibility. I mean, I had a long conversation with Elliott at the All-Star game, and he gave a lot of credit to the system, even though I know he's a good goalie and I've always liked him. But now he's excelling even beyond what I think he thought he could do based on the system. So the goalies know that they're in a goalie-friendly system. I think the players will play just the same in front of either one of them. But I just, again, it's just one of those things where I think it's a lot more settling for a club to know that this is your guy, this is the one, we count on him, just because of the difference in styles. Elliott and Halak are different goaltenders. They do have a little bit of a different style. And as a result, play does change in front of them. And I think that's a bad thing.
Well, that's a very good point. Yeah, you need to let the team settle into a rhythm with the goalie if the styles, particularly when the styles are different as they are here. That's an excellent point. And looking at the big picture for the Western Conference, again, going towards looking towards balance and things like that, to me, the two best balanced teams are the Red Wings and Vancouver. I've got the Wings over Vancouver in the conference finals and then subsequently over the Rangers in the Stanley Cup Finals. How do you see the West shaking out big picture?
Big picture, and I haven't really carried it all the way through with some of the other matchups, but I would take the Sharks still to win it all. Some people will choke on that. Some people will laugh at me. Some people will say I'm crazy. I think Vancouver, while they're looking like this world beater right now, and they've already got the stank of the President's Trophy on them, we know that that's not necessarily a good thing.
Right.
I just think if they don't make the switch to Schneider, at some point Luongo is not going to be stellar. And I think, we know that, I want to say it's Daniel Sedin that's hurt. Is it, you see the one with the concussion
yes.
problem? Right.
Uh-huh.
We don't know when and if he's coming back. That's a hell of a player to miss. If they all of a sudden are kind of wondering when's he coming back, when's he coming, I think at some point they could have a problem down the road. I look at San Jose, they look pretty healthy. They've got a well-balanced team, but they're inconsistent, or at least have been in the regular season. They did finish out strong, 7-3. They've been fighting for their playoff lives every day, and like you said, that 7 seed sometimes does get you there. So I think they can get there. If they can match up against Detroit, I would think that that might happen. And I know that doesn't seem likely this year, but end of the day, Detroit's a plus 45 differential. And I don't think people are giving them credit for that. We know what their home record is. We know their road record wasn't great. But I'm willing to just sort of wipe out Detroit's road record and say with the veterans they have that they can win some road games. But I still think the Sharks, I think it's going to be a year for the Sharks. I think people have gotten tired of picking them, so they stopped. But I couldn't stop it. I couldn't make that the result to do it. I couldn't.
Well, very interesting. Certainly the motivation would be high for the Red Wings if it was that series. It would be a very interesting 5-7 Western Final. Detroit would have home ice, which would loom very large given the record. Mm-hmm. What I find to be an interesting commonality, you have the threes in both conferences, Florida and Phoenix, that shape up in a lot of people's minds as being fairly weak division winners relative to the rest of the field and are the underdogs
yep.
in their series. I look at the 7 seeds. Washington and San Jose, clearly two of the biggest underachieving teams of the last decade here, highly
mm-hmm.
talented teams. You talked about San Jose, often picked to go to the finals, never have, only on a few occasions even been to the West Finals. They're both coming in a little bit under the radar this year. Again, we agree it's not going to do Washington any good, especially with their situation between the pipes. But for a team like San Jose, Boston didn't have as bad of a choking label as they did, but Boston was almost sort of next level before last year. They were about a step down as far as being regarded as a choker, and they broke through that, as you said, with the 3-7 wins here. So for a team like San Jose, maybe coming in as the 7th seed could be the best thing that could happen to them.
I really think so, and I think a guy like Patrick Marleau broke through last year in the playoffs and had a really fine playoff, and I think when you go and look at his consistency for over a decade. You go look at the amount of goals he's been scoring and everything else. His last 3 years, 44, 37, 30, and before that, 38. He had one off year with 19, but then he had 32, 34, 28, 28. Does he even get the credit? I don't think he does. I think this is a guy who's one of the top players in the league. I think some people want to call him soft, but I like Patrick Marleau. I think Joe Thornton is starting to go a little bit on the downhill part as far as big point years, but he still had 59 assists, and he's still a big cog. And Logan Couture, I mean, again, over 30 goals. Pavelski, over 30 goals. It's a lot of firepower. And then Ryan Clough, a guy who's very dangerous. They got Brent Burns in that trade, if you remember. And one of the biggest things, and this is one of the big reasons that the Sharks were able to make it to the playoffs, was Martin Havlat got healthy. And when he was in there, 27 points in 39 games, that gave them that little extra that they really were lacking. And I think that that's the biggest deal. They got Doug Murray back. He's huge. Everybody's got to have that big defenseman in there. I think they've got all the right qualities. I really do. And again, Antti Niemi got through the regular season, still had his .914 save percentage, got 34 wins. Nobody talks about him. And he's able to get the job done.
I mean, there's reasons to look at San Jose, like you said, and like all the ingredients and the way that they could come together. And like you said, the fact that they could slip under the radar somewhat based on coming in as a seven seed. Last question I've got for you, in looking at what I alluded to at the outset with the television picture here, I know that I'm very happy that I'll be able to pick up on CNBC a couple of the Detroit-Nashville games in the next week or so here. But I know the NHL Network doesn't have very wide distribution. NBC Sports Network starting to get a little bit bigger, but this does seem like a big deal that it's all going to be nationally available all the way through, which is what you've had with the NBA for years, and something that, again, really could it would seem like is going to help thrust it more towards the mainstream. Is it as big a deal as I see it as being?
No question. I think you look at it and you say it's as close to the ESPN-ESPN2 deal, you know, that we've seen, and we've all been sort of pining for that for years, and I think now the NHL's big picture for this is real good. Don't get me wrong. If you start traveling during the Stanley Cup playoffs and you're staying in some hotels, you're going to miss some games. There's still not enough hotel coverage to cover the NBC Sports Network, but I think over time, because they renamed themselves, and I know this sounds ridiculous, because at the end of the day, we know that there's still Versus or the Outdoor Life Network or whatever, but when cable companies are figuring out that magic channel lineup and all of a sudden you see NBC, I think it does carry more weight. I think they are starting to get more viewers. And I think more and more places are going to make sure they're on the dial and something else isn't. So I think it's a big deal this year, because you already said, hey, now I can see my team. And I think it does help people, and I think it's going to be even bigger down the road.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. Looking forward to a great run here. I take it you're going to be covering a lot of the games, particularly in Philly, Russ?
Yeah, I'm going to be exclusively covering the Philly-Pittsburgh games. I'll be watching a lot of the others. Boy, I'll stay up late and watch as many as I can, DVR them, catch them in the morning, catch all the highlights, go to practices. I'm going to be, you know, immersed in it all the way through the Stanley Cup. And, yeah, it's going to be amazing. I really do think that if I couldn't cover Nashville, Detroit, that Pittsburgh and Philly is going to be the best series to cover, because I think that will have the most fireworks.
It will. And again, all the emotion that comes with a rivalry like that, the ghosts of recent series that are going to be sprinkled through there, it really is going to be tremendous. Of course, again, we'll be anxious to follow your coverage there at Sportsology and to catch up with you subsequently as we go along through this NHL calendar year and into next year. So, Russ, as always, thank you so much, my friend.
Anytime, Rick. And, you know, I hope you saw the Sportsology article, because I put up a picture of Pavel Datsyuk clutching the Stanley Cup. I don't know if you saw that.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And for mini episode 109 here, of course, the image that folks will be able to look at here is Nick Lidstrom taking the Stanley Cup from Gary Bettman. I'm
there
hoping it's past his prologue. So here we go. Thank you so much, Russ.
All right, Rick. Take care. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you, buddy. Same to you. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Mini episode number 109 of the FDH Lounge. Joint episode here with our good friends at Sportsology.